think they did it on World War Z, the computer game, which wasn't a particularly the computer game. For sake.
All right, granddad.
And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 243. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this post-iOS 7 episode, it's Peter the Voice Wellington.
Hi.
And Keith the Crotch Andrew.
Right, well, now you're going to have to include that entire conversation.
Yeah, otherwise... sorry, guys. We were talking about Keith's crotch before we started recording.
Yeah, I mean, well, we usually are, to be fair.
That's true. We write entire articles, and then we have to delete them because our editors get all funny about it.
I lost you there when you started talking about my crotch. I got cut off.
You drifted out, did you?
Yeah, we were sort of saying, you know, we do a lot of top 10 articles revolving around Keith's... trouser area, basically.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that revolve around my crotch. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Is that due to a size sort of thing? Is it like gravitational pull, or is it?
No, it's just a few toys I bought in a shop once.
All right. One of those little mobiles you get above children's cots that kind of ding, 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 ding.
I don't want to think about it in that way.
Should hope not.
Oh, we're off to a great start so far. How are you guys? Peter, you were feeling a bit poorly last week, weren't you?
Yes, I was, I did listen to the show, and it did touch a very soft part of me.
Your crotch,
guys. When you guys were saying that I was poorly and stuff, and get to get well and things, and then I did get well.
Is that what we said?
No, Keith, you were surprisingly nice.
I remember it. No, me neither.
Yeah, well, but yeah, I'm fully recovered now.
Excellent.
And raring to go. I've got over the Parisian flu.
Yeah, that's
Parisian flu.
Yes, well, you know, that's why it's sacre bleu, you see, because that's the bleu bit, is the throwing.
Yeah, no, yeah, you tried to make that joke last week, didn't you?
No, half. I only half made it just then. It's been a long day. I've been doing reviews for the past 2 days, Infinity Blade 3 and Angry Birds Star Wars 2. And they've been quite involved videos. But we're going to talk about both of those games later, actually, because they're big new releases. Also, iOS 7 is out. Let's discuss that a lot. But some updates first. Just one update for you this week. Magic the Gathering, Magic 2014 to be precise, has just got a whacking great big new expansion. No less than 280 cards have been added, and 6 single-player campaigns as well. If you're not familiar with it, it's a collectible card game. They've done iPad versions for the past however many years, and they've all been really good, actually, if you're into that kind of thing. So yeah, loads more cards and a whacking great big single-player campaign boost as well. This is all, from what I understand, free. That very best price point of all, as long as there's no extra free-to-play gubbins involved with it, which there isn't, so it's fine.
News.
Right, though we usually talk a lot about games on this podcast, obviously, as it's a kind of a gaming podcast. No, Keith doesn't, obviously. But this week, we're going to have to focus on some software, operating system software, in fact. Yes, that's right. iOS has been updated. The operating system for your iPhone and iPad has gone from number 6 to number 7, bringing with it a whole bunch of new changes and the biggest visual overhaul since the software was originally created. It looks a bit flat and a bit transparent in places. And everyone's kind of spent the last 24 hours or so trying to get their head around it and get used to it. In fact, some people are still trying to download it. At the moment, they had a bit of an issue at the beginning. It launched at 6 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time last night, but people couldn't get it for hours in some cases. I had a few issues trying to get hold of it. Have both of you updated, Peter and Keith?
Yes.
Well, I tell you what's weird is that I've had the beta... beta, which for a period was getting updated every weekend.
Oh yeah.
and kind of got used to that, and the bugs slowly faded away. But for the last 2 weeks, while I know people who've got it on their iPhone who've had further updates, on my iPod, I haven't had any. And when I go to check now, I thought there would be some kind of update, considering I'm on the, you know, the beta version to the proper version, that I would have to download something. But it's telling me there isn't anything to download. So as far as I know, I've got the same as what everyone else has got. But,
oh, fantastic. Maybe that final update that you had on the beta, that brought it in line with the official release.
Anyway, I'm a bit blasé about it all now. All you newbies, you know, whatever, flat this, flat that.
I'm not exactly bouncing off the walls about it. I mean, as with anything, it's a change, and that's always a bit weird. So you look at it and go, ooh, doesn't look like my iPad anymore. That's a bit strange.
The thing that will make it look better, and it's slowly started happening. I noticed Vine's app icon updated very subtly the other day to make it completely flat, and Facebook's app actual UI is updated this morning so that it's flat. Is when they all start changing the icons that they
match. At the moment, you've got this weird mixture of the new icons, like the App Store icon and the iTunes icon now kind of match up with this new sort of flat block colored design, whereas the old apps are still sticking with that kind of raised light reflection. It looks like a 3D tile. And when you see them all side by side, it looks like a bit of a jumbly mess.
Yeah, Instagram looks very odd now, having this kind of real camera. I suspect they'll change that quick.
Exactly.
I'm surprised they haven't already. It's not like they haven't had any notice, is it?
Yeah. Well, they'll gradually bring it in line. And with this new operating system, you've got a bunch of new features. We did an article which kind of listed the top 10 features you may or may not notice, because in a lot of ways, obviously, it's very similar, despite some aesthetic changes. When you bring up menus, it kind of has a frosted glass effect, so you can see what's going on behind. You've got these active wallpapers, dynamic ones, where you can put bubbles on the back of your screen. And if you tilt the iPad or iPhone, then it sort of moves and gives a 3D illusion. It's all sort of very superficial stuff, but you know, looks fun, looks all right. You can do a few things differently now, though. On the App Store, you can make a wish list, so you can sort of tap the screen and save apps that you might want to buy in the future, so you can just keep an eye on it. You can now do that pinch to zoom gesture. Instead of just being able to use it for taking photos, you can now use it on your video camera, so you can do that kind of shroom 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 real-time focusy stuff whilst you're recording video, which might be useful. Your compass is now a spirit level, which I'm delighted about, because I don't know how I survived this long without having a spirit level on my phone. I had to go to a different app, guys. A different app for spirit level.
Here's the thing that I've kind of been considering. You know, all of this is all well and good, and for the consumer, it's fantastic. But what about all of these app makers who made Flashlight Pro Edition and Spirit Level Pro? You know, what happens to them? The Spirit Level Pro people are out of a job.
I mean, it's the same thing happened kind of even on a more serious level when Game Center launched, and a lot of those third-party tools.
OpenFaint and Crystal.
Yeah, all eventually went.
Game Center's one of the biggest changes in this recent update. It's done away with that green felt table thing it had going on.
Yeah.
And it now looks a bit more sort of sensible and flat and, you know, like a normal menu, I suppose.
It looks pretty, but I'm not really sure what it has to do with anything, if you know what I mean, these bubbles. It's a bit...
I never really did much with Game Center anyway, because I'm a antisocial bastard. But I did check just to have a look. Also, if you go to the clock now, on the lock screen, you can do things from it, which is a new thing for iOS, but everyone else has been doing for bloody ages. So you've been able to access kind of your messages and timers and stuff like that from Android for bloody years. But now you can see, if you set a timer, for example, on your iPhone, you can see the timer actually on the lock screen. You can scrub through your podcast and your songs from the lock screen if you just tap the home button twice.
This is the podcast.
I know. It's a dead format. I just stick with vinyl recordings.
It's not really a lock screen anymore, is it?
It's a function. What do they call it? Active live lock screen? I don't know. Something like that.
But the thing is, like, the lock screen, the whole point of it is to stop you and your fat hands pressing things. Like, and now it's like pretty much everything I use my iPhone for, except for playing games on, I can do from my lock screen.
I suppose the most worrying thing is making calls, though, isn't it? That's the problem. You accidentally dial like Beirut and then have a. Someone in Beirut has a like 5-hour conversation with your right thigh,
And I have one of those numbers saved. I definitely have a Beirut number in my phone.
Yeah. So that's the danger, I think. And you won't have that, so don't worry.
Okay.
Unless you really...
I don't have anything on my lock screen apart from the clock.
No, me too. But then I only use the iPad, so there's no real worry about me putting it in my pocket or anything. Unless I'm wearing dungarees, I suppose, where they have that big single front pocket.
Do you know what? Dungarees, I feel like, and I'm going to get on a bit of a soapbox here, I feel like dungarees have been taken over by pregnant women. Right?
Is this the hill you want to die on, Peter?
Pregnant women and Mario, right, are the only two people that can get away with dungarees anymore.
Don't people paint in dungarees? I seem to, whenever I see someone doing a montage in a movie of people like renovating a house or painting walls or something, and when they do that thing where they're being all happy and they take the paint roller and they roll it on their mate's nose and they chase each other around.
All right. Yeah, all right. No, that's
they're often wearing dungarees.
I think that's movies in the 80s, isn't it?
Yeah, but okay, fine. So people in the 80s who are painters, pregnant women, and the Mario brothers.
Charlene from Neighbours. She worked in the mechanics. She wore dungarees.
Okay, and Charlene from Neighbours. But
in getting Kylie in there, Keith. Well done. Good work.
She was my first experience with dungarees. Yeah.
First experience in a lot of things, I'm sure. Yeah, so what else has changed? Oh, yeah, there's a big difference here. You know when you download stuff from the App Store and you get something and usually it says new, so if you've downloaded it and you haven't played it yet, you get that little icon. Now you've got a little blue dot next to its name.
Yeah, I think that's better. It was used to annoy me in an OCD way that red thing was on the corner. Yeah. Just make me want to start them all up.
It's true. It didn't.
Maybe what they wanted, actually, isn't it?
Possibly. But now, yeah, little sort of inconspicuous blue dot, which does look a little bit neater.
The one of the nicest things that wasn't there at the beginning, actually, is when you're actually downloading an app and it kind of blacks out the app. And you have this kind of circle in the middle that where it lights up as it's downloading it, which is quite nice, which wasn't there from the start. Which doesn't really matter to anyone but me, but I quite like that part of iOS 7.
So it's all little tweaks and adjustments. It's not anything like you're going to look at it and go, my God, I don't know where I am anymore. What's going on? It's still very much iOS, but they've just given it a bit of a facelift and given it a few, you know, nips and tucks here and there. I've you know, only been using it over the course of today. It's all right.
Yeah. I really like it.
Do you?
Yeah, I think it's really good. I'm getting slightly annoyed by the search thing that comes up when you pull down.
Swipe down, like, yeah, that's odd. Because it used to be when you swiped to the left.
Yeah, and I didn't like it when you swiped to the left either. But I think that's a little bit annoying. But generally, like, it hasn't decreased performance on my phone drastically. It's slightly more sluggish.
I've noticed when I pull up the keyboard sometimes it takes a second or so, and I've got the newest iPad, the most powerful thing, and I'm getting a slight, like, half second delay sometimes when I pull up the keyboard. That's a bit crap, isn't
it? That's naff, and that's what started to happen to me when I had my 3G 2 years ago and they updated to iOS 6. It was like, or 5 point, whatever it was. It was like really, really starting to chug. But I think generally, I think it's really nice. And it feels like having a new phone.
Some people have said that. I quite like the bubbly lock screen that I've got on. But aside from that, it's not going to impact my life in a huge way, I don't think.
Funnily enough, I really like the control center. Like, I really like that. I think that's really smart. I think the two things that people aren't talking about, though, are, first of all,
the obligatory porn folder that they've included.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I mean, so handy. I mean, pretty presumptive.
I know. Yeah. But at the same time, that saved me having to create a folder.
Yeah, exactly.
With triple X marked on it.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a time saver. But the internet browser, actually, I was going to say, is it's got these little favorites now. Like, you can tap little squares and it will take you to, like, your favorite website, as well as, like, bookmark, like text bookmarks. And I really like that because, like, every morning when I wake up, I check PG's comments, basically. And, like, I go on to my own site. And, like so I will use those little icons a little bit more. I really like that. And the other thing I really like, actually, are the new sound effects. Like, when you click to lock it, it sounds like you're sort of turning the lights off in, like, a really big stadium.
What did it used to sound like? I can't remember.
It was like, but now it's like, but it's genuinely really good, and I really like the new email received sound effect as well.
Oh, you see, I've got a, that's a genuine problem I have with my email, in that it thinks that I'm getting a load of emails from 1970 that have no content to them. So I haven't actually used. I have 3,800 emails in that inbox because I can't use it.
Oh, right.
Because every time I bring it up, it has a lot of the real emails, and then it's kind of in the middle, all these emails from the 1st of January 1970, which, you know, I wasn't even with Gmail back in 1970, so I don't know who was emailing me then.
Anyway, I guess a lot of you are coming to grips with iOS 7 just like we are. By all means, get in touch. We're interested to see what you like, what you don't like, what you think Apple should have included, and what you think you could have done better. Because that's generally what we hear on Twitter. I wouldn't have done this. If I was working for Apple, I wouldn't have. Steve Jobs wouldn't stand for these block colours and all that. So tell us what you think.
Are all of our listeners drunks? Because that's what you...
Belligerent drunks yeah. who get angry on behalf of a dead businessman. Now, games and junk. Dead Trigger 2 is coming out next month, October 23rd, to be precise. Sequel to the very popular, surprisingly popular, actually, first-person zombie shoot 'em up, which I was thought was pretty, but, you know, I'm not the greatest fan of first-person shooters on touchscreens, so it kind of, the appeal passed me by slightly, but it did look very good. It was another one of those ones that you held up and went, look, check it out, my iPhone looks like a console and that. But the sequel, that's coming out next month. I played it, actually, when I was away at that conference in wherever it was.
Wow.
Where was it? Germany, Cologne, that's right. You were there! I remember.
Wherever it was.
Yeah.
It's like listening to somebody from Memento.
Yes, I have it tattooed on my right buttock. I had to check quickly, which is always embarrassing to do in public.
I thought you had my face on your right.
No, that's the other buttock.
Kissing Peter on the left.
Oh, God!
Oh, my!
Oh, God!
It gets a bit messy after a curry.
I just imagined it.
And now you cannot unimagine it.
Oh, I won't sleep.
Nightmare. Yeah, so I played Dead Trigger 2. It was obviously more of the same. They've included a few new extra features, so that they've now got an auto-fire system where if you drag your reticle over the top of a zombie, then it automatically starts firing, which actually I think works quite well on the iOS shooters, because there's always that problem where you can't move your reticle and fire at the same time, because you've only got the one thumb and the one screen. It never really works very well. I think they did it on World War Z, where you just drifted your thumb over, and if the reticle happened to pass across a zombie's mush, it would automatically start firing, and it actually worked pretty well. Same thing on Dead Trigger 2, works quite nicely. The other thing is to do with the content. So what they're going to do is you start off in America, I think, and then you get access, once you've completed that stage, to another continent. So it moves on to a different area, which is in an effort to make things look a bit more interesting and give you something more to do. But what they're going to do is every month they switch the location. So say you can, I don't know, play in Africa during the first month. And when the next month starts, Africa will vanish and you'll now be able to play in Moscow. And then, yeah, it will continue to change over the course of the next year or something. So there are going to be all these different areas that will get added every month in order to sort of keep you coming back to see something a bit new and different. You will, however, lose the previous level that you had before. They did a similar thing with Robot Unicorn Attack 2, where every week they included a different level and kind of got rid of the old one. Peter not impressed, I see.
But what you're talking about is, like, in terms of gameplay mechanics, that is a retention mechanic. Like, we want you to come back, so we will give you a progress bar to fill up, because there is something inherently exciting about filling up a progress bar for some people. So then resetting those?
It's not, well, I don't know if they reset the level. I assume you keep whatever progress it is. It's just the idea that they're going to continually essentially add a new level every month. I mean, obviously, I'd quite like to just dump it all in my lap right now and sure, let me play through it. But the good thing about DLC content, one of the good things, is that idea that the game is never dead and it can carry on and on and on. And if they're going to be free updates, which they are, then essentially you're going to get a game that continues to grow as the year progresses. And that's kind of cool.
Interesting. That will, of course, mean that you'll constantly have to have an internet connection then, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, once a month, I guess.
Well, no, because, like, if you can play those same modes offline,
mm-hmm.
that means that surely at some point you've segregated your audience so that some people are playing in Africa, some people are playing in Moscow, and then some people are playing in something else because the first person hasn't bothered to update in a while.
Quite possibly. I haven't.
Mm.
Stop trampling on his dreams.
It's not really my
dream. I can hear him crying inside.
I think that's probably the mad finger who are crying. I'm not really that fussed because I'm not a Dead Trigger fan.
But it's kind of, I mean, no, neither am I. But you know, I think it's, I think that's potentially interesting then. It's just, you know, I guess that I'm kind of like not really the main target audience of this thing. I don't like zombies. I didn't really like how Dead Trigger played.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels a little bit like, it feels a little bit like this isn't for me. But I guess if you are a Dead Trigger fan, it does mean that there is a reason to keep coming back.
Yeah.
You're not meant to like zombies.
Are you not?
It's very dangerous if you get too close to ones. You're
supposed to sort of shoot them or, you know, destroy the brain.
Oh, that's how I've been playing all of the games wrong.
This is it. Oh.
I thought they were trying to kiss me.
You can now... They are in a way, but... Yeah, it's a very special kiss.
Okay. Go on.
All right, then. Well, if you don't like Dead Trigger and zombies, how about something I know you do like?
All right.
Phoenix Wright!
Yeah, I do like Phoenix Wright.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How much? Do you want to give it a special kiss?
That's right, I want to give it a zombie kiss.
Well, you will be able to do just that. Dead Trigger 2 is out on October the 23rd. A mere day after that... Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies comes to the 3DS.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Not physical release, at least not confirmed yet. This will be available via the eShop. It will cost you 20 British pounds or 30 of your American dollars. And it's the fifth Phoenix Wright game in English, finally.
Is it the fifth game?
Yes.
Or second, third, Investigations, Apollo Justice. No, it's the sixth.
Says it's the fifth here.
I don't know, I think we're wrong. Hold on a second. Let me do some maths. Phoenix Wright 2, Phoenix Wright 3, Apollo Justice, Ace Attorney Investigations was number 5.
Ace Attorney Investigations?
Investigation, yeah, it's where they cast the antagonist of the first 3 games as the lead character. And
are they not counting that as canon then?
That's an Ace Attorney game and it is canon. So is Ace Attorney Investigations 2, which was never released outside of Japan, so it never received an English translation. But yeah, there are 6.
It's called Ace Attorney 5. Everyone's calling it Ace Attorney 5. Gyakuten Saiben 5.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pulling.
Do you know what that actually stands for in Japanese?
Turnabout Trial?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, don't mess with my Japanese nose.
That's pretty good, actually, yeah. that's why, like, all of the missions in the game, all of the things, all of the, like, cases are called Turnabout.
Here you go. It's the 7th total game in the series.
Yeah.
And the 5th installment in the main canon lineage. So they are not counting the other ones as canon.
Well, then, I'm going to get all upset and return my copy of Miles Edgeworth Investigates.
And write a strongly worded letter
to
Capcom and the other guys who are...
Oh, I'm not asking about that.
Well, if you don't know what the hell we're talking about, you should probably know, because Phoenix Wright has actually landed on iOS over the past year as well. That HD collection of the first 3 games appeared, which I've now played some of and have enjoyed. Yeah, yeah, it's fun in that little pointy-clicky. Have you played these ones, Keith? Because this, I don't know...
I played a Phoenix Wright on DS, because my mother was briefly into it, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure I've annoyed Peter before on these podcasts by saying it was quite fun for a while, but it got quite boring quite quickly.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're about, you know, 5 or 6 hours too long, and they last about... I'm a bit stupid, so they usually last me about 25 hours, but they should last about 20. I'm kind of hoping that because this next 3DS Phoenix Wright is in 3D, they'll have to make like lots of assets for it, so they'll have to make it shorter.
What about if you buy it on 2DS?
Then it'll be in...
So you have to buy a different one?
Yeah.
Does it come in a different, much flatter box?
That's right, yeah. God, wouldn't that be amazing if they did that? Wouldn't they? Oh.
The 2D version is just printed out on a piece of paper. There you
amazing.
Go.
Amazing. So there was that news as well, wasn't there, that the Miles Edgeworth Investigates 2 which is the source of my attentions at the moment, because I'm trying to complete the first one.
All right.
The second one has just had the second case translated by fans, and there's a ROM hack available that you can put onto an R4 card if you have such a thing.
Which we obviously wouldn't condone, but we are free to inform about.
Sure. I bought one literally so that I could get that first case.
Okay.
So they've just translated the second case now. So, like, they've only got, I think it's three more cases to go. Really exciting. Really exciting.
I can tell. Well, no, I sort of enjoyed playing it. It's a funny mixture of the balance between the quite nasty murders and then the extremely wacky, sometimes quite puerile humor of it all. Is strange. It's a bizarre contrast to, like, oh yes, we've battered you to death and you're lying in a pool of your own blood, but here comes a butt joke.
Yep. Oh, so, my gosh, the butt joke.
The one thing I didn't like is the visuals on the iOS version look weird. That redrawn art style. I think it looks much better on the DS.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I know they've gone all 3D with this one, and to be fair, it looks quite good. It looks all cel shaded now, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm really worried because they've given Phoenix a voice finally.
Yeah, and it doesn't just go objection and then flash up a funny sound effect. It goes whoosh.
Yeah,
it's actually got him going.
What's his accent?
Well, we've only heard the Japanese one, haven't we?
I believe so. Yeah,
he's gonna talk like Tails from Little Sonic.
Oh, if he does, I'm gonna be so annoyed.
That would be amazing. They'll give him. He totally is. It's gonna be, hi, I'm Phoenix Wright.
Press A to jump. Press B to.
Objection,
Larry Bird.
Don't know why I made him slightly camp there, but that would be so cool if they made him like a full on queen. That would be amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's called Phoenix.
Yeah, that's so. yeah. And he does wear some sharp sharps.
Update a few Phoenixes.
Do you know what? That is a story to be written, right? Like the costume design in Phoenix Wright is properly brilliant. Like, it's actually ace. If you look at them as basically the costume design, you're meant to kind of infer what kind of people they are from it.
Yes.
And like, there's some characters in like in Apollo Justice where you can immediately tell whether or not they're good guys or bad guys, and you can tell what their personalities are like just immediately. Like, there's one who wears this hoodie and it's got really thick zip lining in it,
right?
And when he turns his head, he's got like really pointy hair, I should say. And he looks like a shark. It's incredible. And like, that's his personality. It's like really calm, and then like massively aggressive and energetic and violent.
He bites people.
Yeah. Is this why it takes you an extra 5 hours to complete the game? Because you're like going, look at this guy ziplining, guys.
It's incredible. It is a really underappreciated series, and I'm so thrilled that this one's getting a release over.
Yeah, well, get ready to appreciate it on October 24th, my birthday, in fact. So I can, if anyone fancies
him
getting me, yes, there's a.
Is that what you want?
No, probably not. Actually, okay. I'll just stick with the usual consignment of illicit narcotics. It's not a birthday without a blackout. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get your box of Quality Street.
That's good too. I'll eat them all at once, and I'll still blackout. About this week, we have two quite big releases, two what should be tail ends to two massive franchises. First up, Infinity Blade 3 is now available. You can get it for £4.99 or $6.99, and it should be the last installment of the Infinity Blade series. We were supposed to have Infinity Blade Dungeons, which unfortunately got canned before it got finished, which is annoying, because that was going to be the deviation from the series where it was more of a top-down dungeon-crawling thing. But last week they announced that Infinity Blade 3 was coming, and here it is. I reviewed it for AppSpy. We reviewed it on the site. I think we gave it a 7 or an 8. And it's not hugely different, to be honest.
Never liked it anymore.
Is it still Punch-Out?
It's still Punch-Out. The differences are, I'll talk about this one here, and I'll talk about Angry Birds Star Wars 2 later. The difference is, you've got another character you can play. So Cyrus is now joined by a lady person called Isla, something like that. So you have two characters to choose from. They've also changed the structure of the game. So you know how in the first game you're just assaulting the same tower again and again and again?
Mm.
You keep trying to get to the boss, and then he kills you and you get kicked back to the beginning. Mm. Now you attack different areas and environments. There's actually a world map, and you go between different places on the map, complete each area, and then move on to the next one. So there's kind of more of a story structure, traditional kind of setup for the game. Thing is, they've kept the old system whereby if you get to the final boss and fail to kill him, then you get kicked back to the beginning of the stage again, which sort of works if you're trying to string out the content because you've only got one area, which is what they did in the first one. It's like, we've only got one area, so we'll make you grind the same area again and again and again. In the case of this, it doesn't really fit, I don't think. It doesn't quite gel, because you're supposed to get a sense of momentum or a sense of progression from moving through the game and going to a different stage. But you get to a really tricky boss, like a few stages in, which is always the way. You're like level 10, they're level 5,000, and you get your ass handed to you, which is what's supposed to happen. And so you have to keep going back to the beginning and grinding. And so you lose the momentum of going through the story, because you find yourself grinding earlier levels to try and get enough experience and stuff to kick this guy's ass.
I have a question.
Go on then.
Okay. Narratively, the game is meant to be about a human being goes to a castle or whatever it is, and then tries to kill the thing, and then ends up dying because he's not powerful enough. But his son, sexist, comes along,
yes,
and decides that, oh, I'm going to take it on as well. And it goes down the male line that through the ages, essentially, right?
Yeah. It looks like they've got some kind of weird Assassin's Creed, like, time travel, put yourself into the past thing. I'll be honest, I didn't play through all of Infinity Blade 1 or 2 because they got boring.
Yeah.
So I walked into this and I'm expected to know stuff about a plot I have no interest in.
But that's the central tenet, right? Now, it's the armor and all of the bad guys look like maybe they've got technology from a medieval era,
yeah,
right? But you die like 30 or 40 times before you get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
How little education is going on in the world of Infinity Blade that they aren't up to modern times by the time that they've killed off this monster?
Well, every time you get killed in this one, you get booted back to a sort of Animus-style table where you, like, wake up and go, oh, that was a bit unfortunate, and then you go out and try again. But,
oh, right.
Yeah, but it didn't...
So it's like Bioshock.
Well, kind of. Well, you're reanimated and start again. Yeah, like I say, I had no interest really in the story, I'll be honest, because it's pretty paper thin. Although, to be fair, like, the voice acting and stuff is much, much better in this one. They've clearly tried to push it as kind of, here's the grand end to a sweeping narrative, which really it sort of isn't.
But don't you always feel, I always felt with Infinity Blade that it was one of those games that we'd been tricked into thinking was good. I never thought it was any good at all. It was always just completely...
No. It's a good game.
I don't think it...
No, think about those words. It is good. Like, it plays well enough. It's not broken. It looks lovely.
It works.
It's a 6 or a 7 out of 10 or whatever it is. You know, it's a pretty good game. It's not amazing, and I think you're right in that aspect. I think we've all been convinced that it's an incredible game. It's not.
I never thought it was incredible. I mean, I've given the third one given it an 8. Because I'm always talking about games that are suitable for their platform, games which are just clearly designed and work well. You know, they're sort of properly optimized for whatever device they're on. And this is what that is. Like, the swipe combat system is perfect for a touchscreen. And I do still enjoy the dodge, parry, dodge, dodge, parry, swipe, 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 to attack. And it really feels like you're involved, and it feels like you're rewarded when you are skillful. Like, I as much as I can, I don't dodge at all in Infinity Blade. I always try and parry everything. That's the challenge, to choose the correct direction in which to swipe and then get in there and do the breaks. And those moments work really well for me and kind of get the adrenaline pumping, and that's all great.
I just felt that when it, I can't even remember what year it came out now, whenever it came out, we were already a few years into, you know, the smartphone game revolution, and it was like they'd dressed up something that actually control wise was very basic and almost felt like it should have come from the launch of the App Store and put it in these incredibly swish looking clothes. But actually, as a game, I thought it was almost pandering to what they thought mobile was limited to, rather than what you could actually do. It just felt, I've never thought it did anything. It always felt like a backward step to me, dressed up in the clothes of something that should be a forward step. You know, people always fell for how it looked and who was behind it. But actually, if you handed someone to that and it didn't look quite swish and they'd have played it, then I'd have said, well, it's the kind of thing that should have been out in 2008. It, you know, it's kind of...
Well, but they hadn't really done it before, though, had they?
It didn't feel old. It just felt very basic. It just feels very... I don't mean by that easy, but I just mean the way you control it.
I think the idea is simple, but I think it's quite nuanced in the way that you have to do like directional parries and get the timing just so. And then they obviously started layering other things on top of it. So you've got a magic system whereby you do gesture-based magic attacks. That's quite cool. And then they introduced lots of different weapon proficiencies. So you can do light, heavy, or dual wielding. And that affects your fighting style as well. If you're using a heavy weapon, you can't dodge. You can only block. Whereas if you go light or dual wielding, you have the option to kind of, you know, skip out of the way, but you're doing much less damage. So... And there's also a huge RPG element dumped on top of this one. So there's this stat building you have. Yeah, I know. But you have to do lots of stat building. So you level up your attack, you level up your shields and things like that, which is newish to the series. There's always been an RPG component, but there's much more this time. You can also make potions and stuff, which have to cook for a set period of time, which, to be honest, I thought was just, it's kind of padding. It's over and above.
I think an RPG is only an RPG if there's some... Japanese character saying something very badly translated that makes no sense on the screen.
Right, yeah. I mean, fans of Baldur's Gate might disagree with you and every other Western RPG ever made. But yeah, okay, yeah.
That sounds reasonable.
People went mental over it. I've seen reviews everywhere. It's getting 9s and 9.5s. And it's like, it's pretty much more of the same. There's an extra character involved and there's some more RPG elements. I don't think the new system of a linear progression with different story gels with the old grindy mechanics. Like, they've tried to put a story on top of an architecture that's built for one environment over and over again. And I don't think the two gel properly. But if you liked the other ones, it's always that cop-out to say, if you like these, you like this. But you will. It looks just as good, looks a little bit better. Not hugely, incidentally. There's not a massive graphical leap at all. But there's a large variety of beasties. The combat still works and is fun. And there's plenty of game to get through. So, yeah, you probably like it. About 8 out of 10. But, so, yeah, still a fiver or $6-7. So you can get that right now. The other one, big release, which I'm going to talk about later, is Angry Birds Star Wars 2. I'll fill you in on that in a bit. It's 69p or 99 cents. You can get it right now. Opinions reserved. Next, Riddick, The Merc Files. Who played Escape from Butcher's Bay? Really?
Yeah, I didn't.
For shame. I thought I was with gamers. Well, not Keith. I thought I was with gamer Peter.
Hold on a second. Everybody knows, thank you, that Vin Diesel Wheelman is the best Vin Diesel game ever made. So why bother sullying it with a Riddick game?
What does the Merc Files mean? Is it somebody doing Mercedes or Merking's what Rio Ferdinand does, isn't it?
No, Merking's what you do when you shoot a gangland leader. You merc 'em.
Yeah, you merc on a Monday.
Do you?
Yeah, Monday is merking day.
Monday's Merkin day. No, Merkin's something completely different, Peter.
I took her for a drink on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I won't say what we were doing by Wednesday.
I gave her a Merkin on Wednesday, and she slapped me in the face for being presumptuous. Anyway, Escape from Butcher Bay was the bizarrely good game that came off the back of the Riddick movie, which was utterly awful. The second one, I mean. The first one was all right in a B-movie sort of way. It was a first-person sort of sneak-em-up shooter thing, which actually was really good, genuinely good game. They've gone down a similar route here in terms of the sneaky, stealthy approach, because that's what Riddick's supposed to be about. Mark's only played a bit of it, but actually says it's looking surprisingly promising. It seems they've got a fairly decent record of making good Riddick games. It's like, it's the one film franchise where actually the games are better than the movies. But you can get it for £1.99, $2.99. We'll have a review up soon. Judgment is being withheld, but looks promising. Here's a weird turnabout. You know RuneScape?
Oh, yeah.
You do know this one. The big online role-playing thingy. That I never know how to pronounce this name. Jagex. Okay, fair enough. That they did. They've done a racer called Carnage Racing, and looks a bit rubbish. Mark's played it, says it's kind of, it works, but it's all a bit nothingy and inconsequential.
Is this their first mobile game? I'm almost saying it's their first mobile game.
I don't know. It's a...
I want to say RuneScape is on tablets.
Really? Can it be played through browsers?
I don't remember. I'm sure we had this conversation like 20 podcasts ago.
Possibly. I've got complete ignorance when it comes to these kind of massive online role-playing games because I find them grindy and boring.
Yeah. Jagex? They strike me as a company that got really lucky once.
Oh, with RuneScape, you're right.
Yeah, because that's one of the few MMOs that is still growing, or at least it was 9 months ago or whatever it was.
Okay.
But everything that they've tried to launch after that, it just crashes and burns.
Mm.
Like they've made this one franchise and it does really, really well for them to the point that I've seen the inside of their offices and they are beautiful.
Mm.
But like, you know, they're clearly doing well for themselves, but everything else that they try just...
Well, they had a bash. I interviewed them for War of Legends, I think it was, which is a sort of ye olde war type real-time strategy game with Romans and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
feudal Japan or something like that. An old timey fight where they waved bits of stick at each other, which I clearly didn't really get much traction because, you know, never heard much from it since. But
they had that Transformers game.
Did they?
Yeah, and they had a Transformers MMO, and I think the story is they launched it, and after 6 months, they just killed all the servers again.
Oh. MMOs are so difficult, though. Like, everyone has a crack at it seems, and even, you know, the big companies, BioWare takes a run at it with Knights of the Old Republic, and it's like, oh, it's not going to work out, is it? Seems like you really have to bottle lightning to get it to work.
Mm.
Anyway, you can get it for £1.99, $2.99, but it doesn't look like it's up to much cop. So, you know, proceed with caution. However, this is kind of cool. Incredipede, which you can get for £2.49 or $3.99. It is a really, really quirky game, which has a lot in common with Quop, that mad athletics game where you control each limb with a different key on your keyboard. Lots of very funny spoof videos were done online. Of it when it came out, where it basically makes your runner look like he's got some kind of disorder with his nervous system. This is the same sort of principle, only you've got this weird bug-like creature, which is like an eye surrounded by limbs with bones on the end. It's very weird looking, but has a really, really beautiful kind of art style. And you have to guide the creature, you know, over the level, trying to control each one of its weird gangly limbs. Says it's a bit weird and obviously very frustrating at times as well, but it really does look amazing. And it's quite...
Have we not spoken about this before?
I don't know if we've... Because it's only just come out now, but it's
ringing
been...
a massive bell.
Yeah, yeah. I remember talking about this when I first joined the company, actually. I think they've been porting it or working on it for a while now.
The company.
The company, yes. But it's only just come out, so it's... I would say it's worth a look because I played the original sort of PC, I think it was a Flash version, and it was you know, interesting, really sort of fun and quirky, but and it does look brilliant, so that might be worth a look. And finally, here's something that you're actually going to be reviewing, Peter, aren't you?
Happily, yes.
DuckTales, Scrooge's Loot. It looks like a sort of first-person or third-person shooter, actually, in this case, where you're running around, the screenshot has... either Huey, Dewey, or Louie, whichever one's got the blue sweater on,
yeah.
is running around with a toilet over his shoulder,
yeah.
Taking aim at someone who looks like they're in some kind of radiation suit holding a sandwich or something. I don't know. But it looks like some balmy third-person arena shooter thing.
It looks like a cross between Fur Fighters and Battlefield Heroes.
Okay. So it looks like those things. Apparently, you can do stuff like batter your enemy with a tennis racket while your enemy throws pancakes in your face.
I think I'm going to give this game a platinum.
Just purely off of the back of the bit of the blurb.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a free-to-play game, so you'll like that.
Yep,
I will. And apparently, we've tried to play it online, and there's nobody there. So it's, well, you know, literally just come out, and no one's getting involved yet.
I mean, to be completely fair, like, I am up for... any premium game that is... Stop it, Keith. There was no long pause there. I'm up for any freemium game that is trying something a little bit new with the freemium model, right? Like, because clearly it can't all just be farm bills, right? So maybe this third person shooter will be interesting. Maybe it'll do something cool. Maybe it'll be like really, really enjoyable and super fun. And just, you know, the fact that it's got a DuckTales license, whatever. Like, you know, the DuckTales games were good on the NES.
Well, the NES one was an absolute classic and hard as balls. But really good. And frankly, anything that keeps that franchise alive, because occasionally, you know, once every few months, the term DuckTales pops up. And whenever it does, I immediately get that song in my head for the next week.
Does it have the theme tune on it? That's all I'm interested
in. Yeah, exactly. I know. It's...
I just hope that the theme tune is the only song that plays throughout the entire thing on a loop.
Until my eyes are bleeding out of their sockets.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Well, we talked a little bit about 3DS games earlier on. Let's touch very quickly on the PS Vita. There are a couple of games out this week. Some things that I'm not quite so familiar with. But you can get... there's a Pinball Arcade upgrades, which I think gives you the Star Wars levels. I think you can get more of those. There's a free Soul Sacrifice battle. But the noteworthy one is Real Boxing, which was out on iOS, I think. Yeah. And it was one of the ones where you could actually use the camera to fight with. Do you remember that?
Could you?
Yeah. You could prop up your iPad or whatever and then use the front-facing camera to, like, mimic your own boxing style.
I did not know that.
That's awesome. A rubbish Kinect, Kinect wasn't already a bit rubbish. A rubbishier Kinect.
Oh, God.
That's scandalous, what you just said.
It's outrageous.
I'd like to distance myself from that comment.
You do so. But, yeah, Real Boxing is now available on the Vita. I played this as well when I was over in that place in Europe that I can't remember. And you control it using the kind of dual sticks to do punches, or you can select buttons. Lots of different control options. I think there are some touchscreen things thrown in as well. It looks kind of pretty. Obviously, the graphics engine is very nice. It's all right. I wasn't that excited, I've got to be honest with you.
Lots of sweat in the shot. That looks good.
It's good, isn't it? There's NAF All on 3DS this week.
No, I know.
There is the just fair warning. Europe is finally getting something called Harvest Moon: A New Beginning.
Oh yes, I do know about that.
And it's like 6 to 9 months after the Americans got it. If you're thinking about getting into Harvest Moon, this is not the one to get.
Oh.
I will put that out there. Tale of Two Towns or anything, or maybe the previous one before that would be the one to get. But yeah, unless of course you do like Harvest Moon games. If you really like Harvest Moon games, this one's all right. But I'm a big fan of Harvest Moon, and this one is probably not the one to get if you haven't played one but are kind of thinking about it.
Okay, so, words of warning there. Sage advice from our 3DS correspondent.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Welcome, one and all. Close the door after you. Don't let the draft in because it's cold outside. Make yourself comfortable in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. This week, we're going to get Peter to jump up first because I'm pretty sure that Mr. Andrew hasn't had the time, so he says, to play games.
Oh,
I'm going to stop telling you before now, and you're just going to have to guess.
That way it'll be a lovely surprise when I ask you about a game, and you go, yeah.
I played 17!
And I've forgotten them all. Well, you haven't played anything this week, but we're going to get you to play something for next week.
I've played Grand Theft Auto, but that doesn't count, does it?
Yeah, so. Me too, but that doesn't count. Wrong podcast. Actually, no, come on. Grand Theft Auto 5 is the biggest thing out this week. $800 million in 24 hours.
Right, I trust the opinion of you, James.
Okay.
Both of you, it's good, isn't it? Like, it is good.
I'm only about an hour and a half, two hours in.
Yeah, I'm not too far in. I'm less far in than that. It's at the moment, it's GTA.
It's a very big step up visually. Five years has made a big difference.
There's lots of rude words.
Right, good.
And lots of words that you can't say.
Lots of words that we as Caucasian males cannot say.
Yeah.
Without fear of evil.
Do you mean
honky.
You mean bums?
Yes, that as well. I think it's got immense amounts of promise, frankly. I'm only at the very beginning of it, like you, Keith, but there just seems to be that there is... I accidentally... misunderstanding what I was supposed to do in the game. It says events happen all around you was one of the pop-ups that came up, and then some dude came zooming past in a car that clearly he'd boosted, he'd stolen, and it was appearing as a sort of red and blue flash on my little scanner. So I was like, all right then. And I hopped into a car and I started chasing after him. And I chased him all the way out of Los Santos and up, you know, into the kind of more rural areas of the map. And I didn't know whether I was supposed to catch him or what, but I kept trying to ram him off the road because my first instinct was violent. And
kill him!
Exactly. So I kept trying to do that, and it just smashed up the car a bit, and he just kept going and going and going. And eventually I crashed into a signpost and lost him. And then I found myself stranded in the middle of absolutely nowhere with a car that wouldn't work. And I had to very slowly make my way back to town. It was a really bizarre detour that took about 15 minutes. But it's one of the kind of thing that I guess only can happen in these massively open world style games. And I quite like that.
What's it called? Emergent gameplay?
Yes, emergent gameplay, where stuff just happens around you and people on the street start getting into arguments and the police show up and arrest one of them and kicks the other one in the ass and then takes off again.
Stuff like that, that's why I play, actually. I don't like the plot. Never liked any of the GTA plots.
No, the Vice City plot is good, no. I stand by that plot. That's good. Because it's just Scarface, the game. But when it gets all serious, I'm not so sure. It's always been a pastiche, and people, they sometimes say, I don't think it is. I think it's playing it straight. And I've never, ever felt they've played it straight.
I think that they don't do that, but they're surely aware that people of a certain age who probably shouldn't be playing anyway, but obviously are, take it straight. They view it as something to look up to rather than something to snigger at. You know what I mean?
But that means we have to ban irony. Just in case some idiot interprets.
I think they need to... I think they need to be aware of. I mean, I can't remember when it was GTA 4 came out, and Rockstar, I think he came out and said something about how they don't target kids, and someone then pointed out that they were on the front of some console magazines that are clearly aimed at like under 15-year-olds, and so it's you. I think they're entirely aware of who plays their game, and I think that does come with some responsibility. I did find, I have to say, the opening. Not the bank raid at the beginning, but the segment after that with the
hood rats with the kids.
I found the script and quite offensive. I did think this is uncomfortable. I'm not really comfortable playing this bit. I wish they just wouldn't talk.
I think I've consumed a lot of media, whether it be either movies or TV shows or anything like that, which focus on that. I mean, I know people have pointed out like The Wire, and obviously I'm a big fan of that, and that's just, you know, wall to wall patois,
right? And someone else pointed out, you know, they went and got real people to advise on the script and stuff, but at the end of the day, it's just a Scottish studio, and I don't know whether they have authenticity, you know, to show people in that way. Is that actually how it is, or is that actually offensive what they're doing? I don't know how much time they've spent with the people they're supposedly representing, that they can say with authority this is true, or because it's definitely not funny. I mean, it's definitely not amusing. So that bit is kind of very straight.
I think with these kinds of games, unless you feel absolutely reprehensible after you commit one of the acts, the developer has failed to get across the sort of complex social message. Like, if you're not feeling absolutely awful for putting a bullet in the side of somebody, then clearly the game's not able to sort of handle those kinds of difficult messages about, you know, gang banging and so forth.
I've never felt awful about doing anything in GTA, I have to say, because it's not cartoon, but it's so obviously in its visual style, and even now with it looking better, it's obviously not.
It's hyper, isn't it?
I felt bad, and I don't know whether it's because of the characters or what, in A Noir, if I accidentally run someone over. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the game was designed that you're not meant to do that, and it would come up on the screen and tell you. But it's similar, you know, you have free reign, you can do it if you want, and then I would feel awful if I did do. Whereas in the opening segment of this, the guy who's driving the AI car drove into two people and knocked them down, and you kind of think, oh, well. But it's more, I don't know, the script that was what was... I felt uncomfortable with. I thought, yeah, I'm not sure about this.
So look forward to that on iOS in what, 10 years time?
Yes, 10-year anniversary, and it'll be in your brain implants devices.
Probably be on iOS before it's on PS4 and Xbox One, really.
Quite possibly. Anyway, actually out this week. Peter, what have you been playing this week?
So I've been playing Planes on the DS, which is a licensed game, and it's surprisingly good. If you've got kids and you want to give them a Pilot Wings game that's not Pilot Wings, then give them that. The main game I've been playing is for the iPhone, and it's called I Am Level.
Okay, I have heard rumblings, but I have no idea what this is.
So we kind of covered it a little bit more intensely than we usually would with a game that's kind of coming out of nowhere, I guess, essentially. Mm-hmm. I saw it in Dundee when I went up there, and it's the work of one guy, effectively. Right. And it's his love letter to Jet Set Willy, Manic Miner, but also Pinball and Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Right. So right? It's a mixture of two Spectrum games and a large side-scrolling RPG thing.
Yeah. So basically you are this small little ball and you have to roll around these levels. Okay.
So Metroid then.
Do you know what? Metroid would actually be a much, much better example than Castlevania. So you're a small ball and you roll around these levels and everything looks like Manic Miner, right? Down mm-hmm. to when you die at the end, a massive Monty Python-esque foot.
Really? The foot? Oh my god.
But it's done really authentically. So it's not any of this like, oh, it's a retro RPG, but it you know, you could never run it on a Super Nintendo. Like, no, it looks perfect. It's even got that screeching C64 tape sound.
Oh yeah.
Of like loading stuff up.
Yeah.
So the pinball element comes in by the fact that the only engagement with your character that you can have is tilting the screen left or right. You can't jump by yourself. Okay. You have to use furniture essentially in the world. So like springs and little flickers by tapping on the screen, and all of the bits of furniture will activate and they'll move. So you have to kind of flick on this spring and that launches you into the air, and you use your momentum of movement and it gets you to this point, and then you tap again and it flicks you. You can flick the thing like a pinball to another part of the stage.
Okay.
And the whole idea is that you go through all of these houses, much like Manic Miner / a Metroidvania game, and you collect stars. And when you collect stars, you get a tick in that room because it's all single screen stuff. You get a tick and you've completed that section. And the sort of balance is trying to collect all of the stars and also reaching a checkpoint. And when you reach the checkpoint, you can start from that point when you die, and you will die so much because it is like Manic Miner in that it is relentlessly hard. It's a little bit more forgiving in so much as you've got these checkpoints, but that's just about it. I thought it looked absolutely fantastic when I went up there, and the guy wasn't really even... he's called Stew. He's absolutely like committed to the whole retro thing. He just loves those games, and this is his love letter to the games of that era, but it's also to pinball. And he's, what I really love about the game is he doesn't fall back on, I'm gonna make an old platformer. Like, it's not, it is a pinball game. So it came out, and because we covered it, he said that he was gonna give, for every 25 views the video got, he was gonna make it free for a day on the platforms it came out on.
All right.
So PG has kind of financially crippled him, because we featured the video on Vimeo and it got a whole bunch of traffic.
Oh.
It's now free. So it came out on Android and it was free for, I think, 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he was kind of thinking maybe it'd be free for a day or two. So it's free for that. It's still free on iOS. So go and get it. And then when you've played it and you love it, buy a copy and gift it to a friend, because it's one of those games that, if it finds its target audience of 30 plus something men who grew up in, you know, the late 70s, early 80s with British, probably, home computers, it will delight that audience so much. And it's not really a commercial effort. He's literally just done it because he loves those games. So, yeah, it's ace. And I strongly suggest you go and take a look at it.
Right on. Okay, well, I will have a look at it then in that case. I will now hop upon the throne, and I'll talk quickly, because there's not a great deal to say, about Angry Birds Star Wars 2. That's what I've been spending my day doing, reviewing that. There's a video review up on AppSpy. There's a review up on Pocket Gamer as well. It's the second episode in the Angry Birds Star Wars thing. They've added some new characters, so this is dealing with the prequel trilogy. meaning you've got little tiny Anakin, pain in the ass Anakin and his pod racing, and you've got Dooku and Padme and other characters from the early ones, and Jar Jar, which usually means that I want to punch whatever screen he appears on. But in this case, he's actually quite good. He's actually one of the better characters in the whole thing. Force power still remains, so when you flip your bird into the air, if you tap the screen afterwards, they'll do a secondary attack thing. So Qui-Gon swipes his lightsaber and Obi-Wan uses force powers to push things. In Jar Jar's case, he fires his tongue out like a hookshot, and you can use it to latch onto bits of the environment, or you can attach yourself to an object and then kind of swing the object via momentum at your enemies, which is actually really cool and quite good fun to use. The other big change is that they have two types of campaign. You've got a light side and a dark side campaign. So instead of just playing through the same levels, you've got ones dedicated to each side of the Force, which means you get to control the piggies. So for the first time, Keith Andrew, because you like the piggies, you can play as the piggies, killing the birds.
What?
Which is the first time that has happened, I think.
Do they still laugh?
Yeah, in a kind of Star Wars way. Yes, they do.
It's the laughing that
you like.
That I like.
Yeah. So
I've met the guy who does the laugh, by the way. The laugh.
Did you make him laugh? Did you, like, do that
he
thing
did it
where...
voluntarily.
He did.
He knew that's what everyone wanted.
You gave the crowd what they were looking for. But yeah, you can control the piggies, so you've got like a Boba Fett pig and a Darth Sidious pig and a Count Dooku pig and all that, and you can attack the birds. It's just Angry Birds, really. It's more of the same, very much more of the same. The extra campaign's nice to have another sort of set of levels to go through that have a different visual style, so it's all dark and, you know, looks a bit Empire. That's a nice sort of welcome change. Aside from that, it's, you know, it's Angry Birds Star Wars again. The big addition, I suppose, is now that you can buy Skylanders type toys to go with it, and you can port them into the game using the little plastic Perspex stand that you put over the camera, and it magnifies the QR code that's on the bottom of the action figure, which is an unusual way of doing it, I suppose. But that, I assume, works. I don't have any toys, and if you were to buy them, it'll cost a bloody fortune. You can get all these different characters by using the in-game currency. I don't think you can get them all if you just play, though. You get a lot of coin, and I could buy a few of them. You can either choose to buy them, top them up in a consumable way, buy 10 Jar Jars or something, or you can choose to unlock them.
But 10 Jar Jars?
Yeah, but unlocking them costs a fortune. So I don't think you can actually unlock every character without dropping some real actual money into the game. But you can get a fair few, and you can certainly complete it. I mean, it's good. It's still got that polish. It's same attention to detail as before. All the Star Wars music and sound effects, and, you know, very authentic thing it is. If you aren't convinced by the other games, this isn't going to convince you, because it's just more of the same. But if you liked the other ones, and, you know, you're not sick of it by now, I don't know where they're going to go from here. I mean, I bet you they're going to do like the Clone Wars ones or something like that. That TV spin-off cartoon series they did.
Surely what they're going to do is slow the releases of Angry Birds right down and just concentrate on the absolutely amazing stuff coming out of Rovio Stars.
Maybe, hopefully. The Rovio Stars stuff has been good, actually. Tiny Thief was great, and... what was the other one? The Icebreaker one. That was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. There's already a blank slot at the end of your campaign for the next chapter to be updated. So they've got lots of updates in mind, I'm sure. 69p, 99 cents, I think. Which brings this episode to an end. Thanks for joining us. We went on a few detours along the way. But come and find us again next week. We'll talk about more games, probably. No promises, though. See you later. Bye.
Bye.